All right, now, Bart, you've given me grief for the past week because I keep calling this series Guaranteed Win Weekend for the Toronto Blue Jays. You know why I call it Guaranteed Win Weekend.
Why, Jeff?
The Rockies have not won in Toronto.
Have they played in Toronto?
Well, yeah, Interleague Baseball. They're 0-9 all-time in Toronto. They were swept three games, 2013, 2007, 2012. They're one of five teams in the modern era since 1900 to be winless in a single ballpark, minimum nine games. That includes the Blue Jays at Shea Stadium from 1997 to 2001. The Montreal Expos at Crosley Field, 1969-1970. And my first favorite team, the Brooklyn Tip Tops at Federal League Park in 1914. Oh, yeah, and the Baltimore Orioles at Sportsman's Park in 1902. The last team to start 0-10 at a single ballpark was the Mets at Oracle Park from 2000 to 2003. So there you go. 0-9. It is Guaranteed Win Weekend against the Colorado Rockies, is it not?
No, I don't know what any of them stats mean. Like, what is that? I mean, have they faced Ryan Feltner before? Do you have any idea what their lineup looks like when they've never faced a guy before? Don't look real good. Like, I mean, those stats are, I guess, something that we could read off and waste about another, 3 minutes of Blair
and Barker.
They've
never won here.
Blair and Barker.
They've never won here.
Why you
and that's against some bad, that's against some not good teams, too.
Must be the road trip or you have to have a passport or what?
Well, I'm just saying. That's been against some bad teams.
You think any of the players know that they're 0-9?
Yeah, they will if they read the game notes.
How many players read the game notes?
A lot of them do.
How many notes?
The ones that stay in the majors a long time generally read game
maybe
notes.
Maybe that's why they stay in the majors a long time.
These are the game notes put out by the Rockies. I'm reading the Rockies game notes. This is an official release from the Colorado Rockies.
Team meeting. You guys know it's an organization we've never won here?
I'm just saying.
Be afraid to win a game.
If I was covering the team, first thing I'd do is go up to to somebody in the team and go, hey, you guys have never won here. You know why? Bud Black will know why. He's the manager.
He would know why? That they didn't win.
He'll know about it. Okay. Anyhow, Guaranteed Win Weekend.
Two or three?
Three. Sweep.
Three in a row. Wow.
Sweep.
Wow.
First pitch tonight is 7:07 at the Rogers Center. We have a lot to get to today. John Schneider, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, joins us at 3 o'clock. David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, joins us at 3:30. Ryan Spielborgs will be along at 2:30. He's a Rockies TV analyst. It is Ryan Feltner against Kevin Gausman tonight. The other matchups in the series, Dakota Hudson against Bowden Francis for now. We'll talk about that in a minute. And Kyle Freeland against Jose Berríos on Sunday. Now, the reason I said we'll talk about Bowden Francis in a minute is the Jays have not confirmed this yet publicly. But according to Francis Romero, who is a reporter based in the Dominican Republic, and Shai Davidi, the Blue Jays are bringing up Yariel Rodriguez from AAA Buffalo. Now, the original report from Francis Romero was that Rodriguez would be activated on Saturday. And that's as far as we know right now. I haven't seen anything official from the Blue Jays one way or another. So if Yariel Rodriguez is activated Saturday, that would suggest that there would have to be a roster move, perhaps Paulo Espino or...
Yeah, he has options.
Or perhaps you put Tim Mays on the IL after what we've seen from Tim Mays lately. But again, this is just all spitballing here. Perhaps Yariel Rodriguez starts and Bowden Francis goes in the bullpen. The thing, Kevin, we know about the Blue Jays and Yariel Rodriguez is they have, because he didn't pitch last year, they have a pitch limit, an innings limit on this guy. Like, they have a plan for how they want to get him through the year. And I guess there's two ways to look at it. One, if you're only going to have a certain number of pitches, why waste those pitches at AAA if the guy's ready to go? You know, use the pitches up here. And I guess, too, the other thing would be, okay, if you bring him up now, does that mean you're sacrificing possibly using him later in the year? And, you know, it really doesn't, because the fact that he's pitching right now, like, he's going to make an he was scheduled to pitch today in Buffalo. So he's either going to pitch today in Buffalo or pitch tomorrow in Toronto. Like, it doesn't matter. He's going to be pitching someplace, and if he's good, you might as well have him right now. We can worry about pitch limits down the road.
I think it only, but well, yeah, because he can pitch in the pen too, so you can maneuver around, right?
Correct.
You can. I would think, right, if Bowden Francis doesn't start, Rodriguez would start, Bowden Francis will follow. It would be that kind of thing. The Tim Mason thing doesn't make any sense. Everybody I've talked to and listening to Tim talk doesn't sound like he's hurt. Just sounds like it's performance driven. Mechanically, he's doing something that's not allowing him to reach full velocity, and that's something he needs to work on. And he's talking about getting in the weight room and, you know, working on lower half and shoulder and rotation and those kind of things to get the extra tick in velocity. He's went through this before. It's not the first time he had dip in velocity. This is just the first time it's been missing for this long. And I think that's the, you know, what they're trying to figure out. And we'll ask John, you know, is there something that he's seeing?
Could create an injury for him. It wouldn't be the worst thing.
Come on.
Well, I mean
you're a professional athlete. I guess if that's what you want to do.
It's never happened in baseball.
I know,
but never created an injury for him.
Not that I've heard. They didn't come out and say, we're putting him on the phantom.
Well, they don't come out. It's very easy to come out and say he's going on with shoulder fatigue.
I guess. I mean, if that's what they want to do, go for it. But everybody that I've heard talk to Tim Mays, this sounds like it's more mechanical than it is something that has to do with an injury. So maybe, if that's what they want to do, I guess.
Of course he's not. I'm not saying Tim Mays is hurt, but I'm saying he wouldn't be the first guy to go in the IL with a fake injury. Come on.
I would think it would be more of Espino. I mean, again, how much faith do they have in Cabrera to make up for Tim Mays, even if Tim Mays is not the best Tim Mason that you want to see? That's the thing too, right?
You can't do it until you get Eric Swanson back here, so you've got somebody else that you can use against lefties.
Well, they're going to have to make a move for Rodriguez. Who would that be? I would think it would be Espino because he has options. He would be on that train back and forth, and that's okay too. So, you know, and would they want to DFA Mitch White? That would be another thing. I would think it'd be too early in the season to do that.
That's gonna
be rubber meeting the road real soon with that. I mean, I know what they were tooting in spring training and about, you know, he's got Wes Parsons' grip on the curveball, boy. That thing's some kind of good. I mean, it's performance driven now, right? And they need more innings from their starters. 64 and a third just ain't enough. Like, they need more. So maybe Rodriguez can come up, give them, you know, four innings. I don't know. He threw 47 pitches last time. What would the number be? I don't know what the number would be. But his stuff is really, really good. He's given up one hit, 6 1/3 in the minor leagues.
Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson both pitched yesterday at AAA Buffalo. They're both down there rehabbing. Jordan Romano did not look good. 18 pitches, 6 strikes, 2 walks. Eric Swanson, you know, first time Eric Swanson. When's the last time Eric Swanson's actually pitched in a game? And Ricky Tiedemann started 3 2/3, 7 strikeouts, 3 walks. So again, with Jordan Romano, I don't think necessarily that it's going to be a matter of results in Buffalo. We're going to determine when he's up here. I think if his arm, if everything's fine, checks out and he's not sore, I think he'll still be up here to see the Yankees.
That's how you feel the next day. It's how the velocity was, how much the break on the slider.
And, you know, I mean, look at the weather yesterday. That's why I never put a lot of stock in when guys are rehabbing in Buffalo at this time of year. I just want to know how they felt afterwards.
Yeah, and it's the heart rate, too. How's he handle the heart rate? Yeah. You know, the overthrowing and the throwing it through the catcher instead of to the catcher. Like, there's something to that. Yeah, they'll have a bunch of reasons and you know, how they're going to go about when they call him up and those things. And I'm sure they'll ask the question, hey, how do you feel? How was it? Mm-hmm. How do you feel today? How does your fingers feel? Like, how did the break on your slider feel when you threw it? How does your velocity, how's it coming off your fingers? Do you feel like you can throw strike one with both pitches? I'm sure they'll ask this question because they're really good at the communication thing. But, boy, they need those two. Man, fingers crossed they can get here in a hurry just to sort of solidify what they're trying to do to win a game.
Yeah.
That will help.
Yeah, well, when you look at what we've seen so far from Trevor Richards and from Jimmy Garcia and even from Nate Pearson, you know, you throw these two guys back in the mix, all of a sudden that bullpen starts to have a little more length. And I can't say this enough. If there is a lack of confidence in Yenesis Cabrera, then having Eric Swanson and that split finger back here is hugely important.
Yeah, Cabrera wasn't going to be the reason why they make the playoffs. Right, it was he. You know, the velocity that he has being left-handed, and he can give Tim Mays a little bit of a break, and You know, that only helps when you have two lefties to go down to when you're John Schneider, instead of trying to get your guy that throws a changeup and your guy that throws a split finger to get a bunch of lefties out in the meat of the order. It'd be nice to give one of those lefties a different look, right? It's a series, mm-hmm. not always one game. You'd like to mix it up and be able to
Absolutely.
Give that lefty a different kind of look, and it's always nice to have two lefties instead of trying to do it with a couple of righties and a lefty. So, yeah, I mean, it gives everybody a bunch of options. I will say this. If you're in the rotation, start throwing more innings. Give more quality of those innings. That will help everybody. That means John Schneider. Everybody.
It is Friday, which means we go to the back leg line. It's your chance to leave questions or comments for Kevin and myself. The number, as always, is 416-413-3959. Barry from Thornhill, Ontario. Get us started.
I'm looking at the Jays lineup till now, and 1-4 is pretty solid. But after that, you just have a bunch of bottom third bats and a committee for 5 and 6. Perhaps when Jansen comes back, he can slot into the fifth spot. I look at teams like the Yankees that can trot out a regular 1-6, and I think Jays are sorely missing regular middle-of-the-order bats that they can put in. Thinking back to the days of WAMCO and successful Jays teams where they had a regular 1-5, 1-6. Appreciate your thoughts and comments.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this. I think in the offseason, we both would like to have seen this team get at least another hitter in here.
Yep.
So then maybe that, you know, maybe that hitter's in the fifth spot. Jano slash Kirk hit sixth or seventh. It is, the caller's point is well made, though, I think. And Danny Jansen, we talked about this. He had a grand slam a couple of days ago. He had a base hit yesterday as well. But I think with Danny, it's as much going to be how is the hand handling the catching and the throwing aspect of the game as anything else.
Yeah, it's the five righties in a row, too, they wanted to stay away from. That's all right. They were trying to run Varsho out there in the five hole.
Yeah.
They wanted some lefty-righty action working.
Down just in so, the bottom.
Yeah,
the
yeah, and Dalton Varsho's not been real good offensively, so now they got to maneuver. And
now they've got Biggio going lefty-righty-lefty-righty.
It's sort of, yeah, like it's to the caller's point. It's, I mean, I couldn't have said it any better than he said it. It's sort of... That's why they come on this show. They come on every show. They come on and say that the first four guys are going to take them where they're ultimately going to end up.
Yeah, and this is, I don't think, Kevin, I don't know about you, I don't think we're going to see a set lineup this year in the bottom of the lineup all year. I just don't.
Yeah,
I don't think at any point we're going to be looking at it and going, oh, it's the same lineup as yesterday.
I think they'd like to have Biggio hit ninth. I think they like their at-bats. I think they like the how many pitches he sees per at-bat. They think he can get on base
for George
a little bit more than Kiermaier can get mm-hmm. on base. I don't know if it's mindset. I mean, if Kiermaier's having that mindset of trying to hit a homer, he better change that. Okay, that ain't working. So, I mean, that's why John put him in a seven hole, just sort of free him up to where he can swing it at an 0-0 fastball in and try and pull it and get it in the air. Like that sort of different kind of mindset. But, yeah, I'm with you. Like the runs that they've scored is just not enough. I think they're 21st in run score. It's just not good enough. Like that's why it's when Danny gets back, you're seeing him. He had a double, two-run double yesterday in the game when he was catching. And, boy, they need somebody to do something. Like, you know, and it can't be Turner all the time. You know, Vladdy's going to have to get on a run here where
two,
it's
two doubles
three or four
and, two
weeks
doubles
in
a homer, I think, in his
yeah.
yeah.
I mean, anything driving the ball to the pool side in the air. Like, they need that with traffic. And they just don't have a bunch of guys right now that can do it. So anybody that can come up and give you that kind of at-bat, they're fingers crossing it and praying for it. I'll say it. They are.
Daryl from Cambridge, Ontario.
Out of curiosity, is there any reason why they pulled Kikuchi? He wasn't even at 90 pitches. You could have easily gave him, the way he was pitching, you could have easily gave him another inning. Then the last two innings would have been Garcia's, and you know, they probably wouldn't, the way he was pitching, would have gave up the two-run home run. Thanks. Look forward to hearing from you. Bye.
Yeah, it was, right? I mean, it still was Jimmy Garcia throwing the last two innings. He got him to the ninth inning. I mean, that... he had three guys in the pen he didn't want to use, you know, and you got to remember how many starts Yusei Kikuchi's had. Like, he's not going to abuse him third start of the season, just not going to do that. And he was really good. Like, you ask him to take a step forward from the second start to the third start. He absolutely did that. And now you turn it over to the guy that's your best guy in the pen because the dude just hit a home run to tie it. You're trying to get it to the ninth inning so you can walk it off. You got three guys in the pen, we've said this, that he didn't want to use. It was the two lefties and Mitch White. Didn't want no part of those three guys. So if the offense gets a big hit in the ninth inning, everybody's saying John Schneider's a genius. But because they didn't, now you're asking, well, why didn't he run Yusei Kikuchi out there? Well, again, it gets back to that. He's not trying to abuse a guy that he's going to need the entire season to be really good and try and give him a bunch of quality starts. So I had no problems with the way he handled that. That he handled it exactly the way, in my mind, he was supposed to be handling it. I got a guy. I want to use him to give my offense a chance to walk it off. And just so happens, Kirky didn't get a hit and Clement didn't get a hit.
I know that one of the things, and we've got to kind of move beyond this, but one of the things, we had, I believe another caller mentioned this because we were listening to the back leg line. You know, the idea that, well, they let Bassett throw such and such a number of pitches. Why didn't they let Kikuchi do it? You got to get away from that because 115 pitches for Chris Bassett isn't the same as 115 pitches for Yusei Kikuchi. 92 pitches for Yusei Kikuchi isn't the same as 92 pitches for Chris Bassett. It always surprises me when people say, well, the night before you let a guy go this long, it's not one size fits all.
Yeah, I think one guy's done it before, one guy hasn't done it before. One guy's got more equipment to do it this part of the season than the other guy's got. Like, you know, sometimes you get what you get from Yusei and you don't want to push it. And when you get a tie game and you can go to your best guy and that best guy gives your offense a chance to walk it off in the ninth, I just think sometimes people that don't like John Schneider will never be able to do anything right. And I think that's where it's at with some people.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. No, I didn't get the impression that Darryl was being overly critical. I think he was asking a question. I didn't get the sense that he was dumping on John necessarily. I think he was questioning it. Go to Los Angeles, California, Roy.
So I'm presently on the 405 stuck in traffic, but I'll take it. But what I won't take is the guarantees in this world that there's death, taxes, and Varsho hitting a pop-up. Can you tell me why, whether it's a slider, fastball, curveball, whatever, the dude just continuously pops it up?
Absolutely.
What is it about his swing that makes that happen?
That's a great question. He's a stride separate guy. I mean, this is real easy. I've told you this. Fluidity to a swing is one of the most important parts of a swing other than you having good separation. The rubber band effect, everybody talks about that. That's when the foot goes one way, the hands go the other. Now, he's gotten a lot better at that. He's made a real conscious effort to have more of that, which will help with rotation. Torque in a swing, you don't want to force that. You don't want to have an internal clock that tells you because you don't have good enough stretch to basically telling your midsection, now I have to rotate and have the torque good enough to be able to be more balanced and have enough bat speed to catch up to velocity. When you stride separate, starting, stopping, starting again does things to your barrel. It makes it go up and down. I've done this before with two strikes a bazillion times. And the big issue you have instead of chopping wood is the barrel tends to get more of an uppercut because of two strikes where they're trying to throw you. It's hard to stay on top of it or the middle of the ball. You hit the bottom part of the ball. That's why the ball goes in the air. So, yeah, it's real easy. I mean, again, it's the expectations of Dalton Varsho. For me, I don't want him hitting in the top six parts of the order. Put him at the bottom part of the order and tell him to try and pull a homer every time he goes to the plate. He's not a good hitter. He can hit a bunch of homers. If he hits 20 to 25 homers, steals 20 bases, plays the defense he plays, you okay with that? Hits a buck 95. I mean, who cares what he hits? Like, I think that for me, if you're a fan of the Jays and you're a fan of Dalton, which you should be, because he's a trier, he's a very good player. He's just not a real good hitter right now because he's in between a bunch of things and he has a bunch of giant holes because of that reason. And I just think the expectations for us with him sort of calm him down a little bit and just think, if he hits a home run every couple of games, it can help a team. Say, hopefully, it's a guy with a guy standing at second or a guy standing at first. You're happy with that because of the way he plays defense.
Yeah, we need to move beyond who he was traded for. It's not Dalton's fault that that was the deal.
Yeah.
And I don't think
people will ever be that way. I mean, that's more the GM's fault than that is the player's fault. But yep. You know as well as anybody, because every time he grounds out or strikes out with a guy on second, everybody thinks, well, man, it'd be nice to have the other guy standing up there other than Dalton yep. Varsho. And it's not fair to him. He's a good player. He's just not a great hitter. There's a big difference. And not everybody can be a great hitter. And he's just in between a bunch of things mechanically, and that's very hard to do, especially nowadays with as good a pitching as.
Doug from Vancouver wanted to talk about our interview with Dr. James Andrews yesterday.
With regards to Dr. James Andrews, I always wondered if UCLs, where they get them from. I'm assuming cadavers. Are there, certain criteria? Is it, are they getting from old people, young people? Are there, I'd be curious to know about the sourcing process on that. Take care, guys. Thanks.
Yeah. Speaking of mine, if you want, old persons.
Mm.
I have no idea, so I did some reading on it. And I do know from with Tommy John, a lot of times I believe they take the ligament from the
calf.
Yeah. Now, I'm not a doctor. No. I just Googled this. It sounds very much as if the hamstring is an area that they will sometimes take tissue from.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing a lot of now is what they call an internal brace. I mean, we've heard that instead of actually doing a transplant, they put a brace in there.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. But, you know.
Yeah, that's a good question, but I don't either. I mean, that's the first time I have to
but
say
I do
that.
Know
not
that,
a doctor.
I nope. do know that, Tommy John and that they will look for ligaments in the body that they can use.
Yeah.
Or pieces of
makes
it that
sense.
They can use. I would presume that maybe cadavers are a possibility, but
I would think that would cost money. I would think if you could use what the person already has off of their body, it's cheaper to do it that way. And I'm sure the cheaper way to go is the way they would probably go. Again, I have no idea. I mean, I'm guessing here, and I have heard from the calf to the arm, the elbow. I have heard that before, but other than that.
Yeah, I don't think it wouldn't be the Achilles. It would be the calf, I think, more than anything.
Yeah.
I'd be off of, take it out of the Achilles.
Yeah. It's a good question, though.
It is. Yeah. Yes, it is. Diego from Milton, Ontario.
I was thinking, you guys should run like a line of merch.
Huh?
Kevin's got all these sayings, man, and I think they're going to waste. Like, he can, can throw them on a T-shirt and make a killion. Like,
we could do that.
Take you behind the woodshed and
nice.
Get it down, get it singing.
Absolutely.
I can only take like 5% cut if you guys go ahead with this, man. Thanks. Mm. Keep up the good work. Love
Thanks.
The show.
Awesome.
Hey, there you go. Well, I mean,
yeah,
we can talk to. We can give you the names of some people you can talk to.
You do?
Well, we got one guy you can talk to. I don't know if he'd do it, but
Yeah, it's not like I haven't been asked that before, and I always give the same answer. It costs a lot of money to get something started, even T-shirts.
Yeah,
I spend enough money here.
This is a topic of conversation with
yes.
Mr. Barker.
Yes, so it is.
It's a great idea.
It is. I absolutely.
Don't let it beat you.
Absolutely, it's a tremendous idea.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
If somebody out there,
I've often wanted to make sweatshirts to say khakis across it.
Now I was thinking about that. Yeah, if somebody out there wants to get it going and doesn't want us to contribute any money, have at it.
No, it's not their science. It's my science.
Well,
how you do it. No,
but I mean, if they want to do it, we can. I mean, I would want the money.
I don't think
I just don't want to have to invest
in,
any money.
He had nothing to do. He didn't say can you let Blair give the okay if
that.
I do this? No,
okay,
that's not what he said.
You can take the seed money for it.
I can. I think you're trying to give away, some of the things that I do well.
Ryan Spielborgs is a Rockies TV analyst. He's also an MLB Network radio host. He's got the intriguing Twitter handle of SpillyGoat19. He joins us next. Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
.707 will be the first pitch tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And Sportsnet is the Colorado Rockies open a 3-game series against the Toronto Blue Jays. John Schneider, the manager of the Blue Jays, joins us at the top of the hour. David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. will be along at the bottom of the hour. I don't know if you saw, Kevin, but Jordan Montgomery apparently has fired Scott Boras as his agent.
Hey.
And he was, of course, part of the Boras 4, or Boras 5, however many it was, free agents who didn't get a job until after spring training or in spring training. There was a group of them. And a lot of us were wondering what that would mean for Scott Boras. Yeah. And
I don't blame him. Not now, when. I mean, basically, he can't pitch any better than what he's pitched the last couple of years in the playoffs and stuff. Absolutely. Montgomery? Yeah, absolutely. So I'm with you. 1,000%. Good for him.
Yeah. No, it's not really it's not really a huge surprise, I don't think.
I think Boras will live, though. He'll be all right.
Yeah, I think he'll. I think
he'll
be
all right.
Like I said, the impact, you know, the real impact will come with this year's crop of free agents, guys like Alex Bregman and Juan Soto. Those are the guys that I'm kind of interested in.
I could be Juan Soto's agent. How hard is it? I'm gonna have the Mets and the Yankees bidding on me. You call how much you want to offer, how much you want. You just keep going until the offers run out. I mean, how hard is that?
I think it's a little, there's a little more to it than that.
It is. I mean, it's going to start with a 5.
Anyhow, so we'll wait and see what happens with
it would be
with their
they'll make
with
it
the free agents. But yeah, it's you know, we'll talk to Sampson about that. It'll be intriguing because knowing David's history with Scott Boras and from David's time as a MLB executive, David has kind of been saying that at some point, you know, this will, like, at some point people are going to move beyond, well, he's Scott Boras and he'll make it up for them next year. And it is a story that I think is worth
following. Sounds like he
made
promises he didn't keep. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, or
don't take that offer, I can get you better. That kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a lot more than 1 year at however much he's making.
Yeah. Sometimes it's better to under-promise and over-deliver as opposed to over-promise and under-deliver, right? So anyhow, we'll see where that goes. 7:07 is the first pitch tonight. Ryan Feltner is on the mound for the Rockies. Kevin Gausman for the Blue Jays. Dakota Hudson, Bowden Francis. That is the matchup right now for Saturday's game. Sunday, it's Kyle Freeland against Jose Berrios. We're waiting for Ryan Spielborg, Rockies TV analyst, to join us. He's doing the Apple TV game tonight, by the way, which is the Orioles and the Brewers.
Yeah.
As the Orioles continue their kids tour.
Yeah, I just don't think they know any better. Watching them play, it's like they just run around. They're supposed to be good. Like, it's like expectations. What? It's like we're going to be good and do things and all kinds of places. And yeah. So,
can somebody speak to me and let me know? Thank you. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us on Blair and Barker. We had a technical issue.
It's Friday.
It's Friday, man. Yeah.
Hey, these things happen. That's the beauty of live programming.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks for doing this. Looking at some of the Rockies numbers coming in here. What? Tell me that there is improvement being made, Ryan.
Well, it's kind of hard to say that because there is some improvement, but there's not a ton of improvement. There's the future right now is, you know, you're in a bit of a refresher for the Rockies. And so, you know, it's probably one of the last years on the roster for Charlie Blackman. You're hopeful with Chris Bryant that he's going to be able to bounce back this year. So far, it's not been great. I will tell you, like, I think Nolan Jones is going to be an all-star. I think Ezekiel Tovar has a chance to be an absolute stud. He's the one that's improved a ton. Brenton Doyle's a center fielder that probably would remind a lot of people of Kevin Kiermaier, Kevin Pillar type. The defense in center is just awesome. A little short on the offensive profile, but that's okay. To get that elite of a defender, you're okay with it. But there's a lot of things that the Rockies have to improve on that they're just not there yet. So I can't realistically say, hey, this team is a bunch of improvements because it isn't.
Billy, how about Ryan McMahon? I mean, he looks really good whenever he plays. I mean, he's a really good left-handed hitter. He plays really good third base. Looks like they could, you know, build around him. What's his story, and why is he so good when he plays?
Well, you know, defensively, I appreciate you bringing up McMahon because I'm proud of what he's, you know, done this last year. Just had the birth of his first child. I made some swing adjustments. This guy has always had a little bit of a swing and miss in his game this year. Like, Kevin, you get this. He's in his legs a little bit more. Mm-hmm. His hands are directed to baseball, so he's really short. He's hitting with two strikes because he's using the whole field. So, like, these are – and this is his seventh year in the big league, so it's not like it's a – you know, like, it's not like he's just now coming to the big leagues. He's been around for a while. But you dig into some of the defensive run saves. He's been, you know, top five at the third base position in the last couple of years. So he's a good player. He is a really good player. I'm just interested to see what the Rockies do with a player like McMahon or a player like Brendan Rodgers or an Elias Diaz. There's about three or four guys that are under contract with the Rockies right now that I don't know if it's part of the future or if you look to move them at some point.
Billy, how hard do you think it is whenever you're trying to make adjustments in the offseason? You're talking about Ryan there. Blue Jays are trying to make a bunch of those by, you know, a team-wide approach. And then, you know, you get in the season, you face some tough pitching, you're battling the weather, you know, expectations. You've been through this before. How hard is that to, you know, work on something in the offseason and actually have it translate early in the season?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. It's just one of the hardest parts that you have. One of the hardest parts that you have as an athlete is not getting results after you've done the work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that to me has been one of the problems for players is when you do the work and you know that these improvements are going to help you, but you don't get the results right away. You start second guessing all the things that you did. And that's going to be an athlete's problem no matter what. Like in every sport, every level, is if you don't get results right away, you start to second guess the work that you've done. So it is hard to see changes midway through a season or early in the season when you're not getting results.
Yeah. Ryan, what's the level of concern with Kyle Freeland right now?
I mean, there's lots of concerns. Probably middle to high, just mm-hmm. based on his stuff. I mean, he's not going to overwhelm you with stuff. So he has to be really pitching well on the edges. He had a great spring training and the velocity's up. But, yeah, there's a lot of concerns with the Rockies right now. There's a reason why the record is what it is.
How does Bud Black handle this, Spilly?
Like a true professional. You know, you just keep going about your business. You keep showing up to work every day. You grind with the players. You let them know when they're doing good, when they're doing bad. You have to keep accountability. Stay positive. I mean, all the same type of terms you would expect, like if you're having a trouble in a marriage or trouble at home with the family, right? Like you look for the little wins and you just try to stay positive. And then you hopefully get incrementally better.
What's the early read on Cal Quantrill? He, of course, the guy that, I mean, he's friend of the show, his father, Paul, friend of the show, longtime Blue Jays pitcher. Mm-hmm. What's the read on Cal Quantrill so far? And what is going to be the key for success for Cal, do you think, pitching at Coors Field?
Well, we just saw him have a really good start the other day where his split finger was fantastic. We love the personality of Cal Quantrill. I mean, Canadian-born. We love our Canadian-born baseball players. He also went to Stanford. So all those things, like, I'm instantly like the guy personality-wise. But, I mean, it's the hardest part when you're pitching at Coors Field is walking people. So, you know, as long as he maintains not having walks and trusts the defense and let his split finger work, I think he's going to be fine.
Spilly, you're calling the Orioles-Brewers game. What do you think about the Brewers, and what do you think about the Orioles? I think the expectations for the Orioles are probably real. Like what they're doing, there's no surprise there. The Brewers, Yeah, there's some, you know, some questions there. Maybe are they really good enough to win the Central? Can they do anything without some really good starting pitching? They're sort of proving people wrong, I think.
Well, you got to remind yourself, like the Brewers won 92 games last year.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't like a surprise organization. They have arguably one of the best defensive teams in baseball with youth and, you know, like everybody talked about Jackson Holliday. Jackson Churio is a 20-year-old at the big leagues. It looks like a young Julio Rodriguez, right? So the Brewers have all the ingredients to be a very competitive team in a fairly competitive division. Like I think the National League Central, when it's all said and done, will probably be the closest race in baseball.
Yeah.
I think that will be the one where every team is separated by less than 10 games. You can't say that about every other division. And then as far as the Baltimore Orioles, I mean, what a fun time to be an Orioles fan. You know, like just the amount of talent, and it's not just at the major league level on the roster, it's what they have in the minor leagues. Like the Norfolk Tides could probably kick the junk out of some major league teams right now. As a baseball fan and even as a fan, if you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan, knowing that this Orioles team is right at the beginning of this competitive window with some players that are really easy to cheer for and really easy to watch. I'm not saying that there's a rivalry yet with Toronto or Yankees or Red Sox or anything, but Baltimore will eventually, because of how good they are, there's going to be some bad blood at some point with one of these teams, especially if they're competitive.
Yep.
So that's what I'm looking forward to. And kind of, you know, this, like, you only get rivalries when teams are good.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Like there's no such thing as a rivalry with some brutal teams. So I'm excited to see the next version, the next wave of, you know, where's the rivalry at? Because it's coming. I'm just not sure with what teams yet.
Yeah.
Ryan, awesome. Really good of you to do this, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, guys.
See ya.
All righty. That is Ryan Spielborgs, Rockies TV analyst, MLB Network host. He's got he'll be on the call tonight at the Apple TV game, Orioles and Brewers.
Mm-hmm.
I made this point on Twitter yesterday about the Orioles. I think for a lot of folks around baseball, the Orioles, when they had Buck Showalter as manager, weren't all that likable. This is kind of a likable, fun group. And the one thing I noticed about Adley Rutschman, and I thought about this. I saw an interview with him a couple of days ago on Masson. And you know what he reminded me of? He's got the same poise and presence that Derek Jeter did. Mm-hmm. Just the same, you know, when you see a guy and you instantly think this is probably the guy you want around in a crisis.
Yeah.
Because he'd probably be able to. So beyond being really good and really young, I think they're fun to watch. I mean, we come in almost every day here. Where we always talk about, you see something that somebody in the Orioles did last night. They're just,
yeah, I think if, like, you're having fun. If you're not a fan of the Orioles, you're trying to hate them. And it's hard.
That's like really hard.
Yeah, they got good players. They, you know, they smile all the time. You know, most of them can't grow facial hair, which is kind of funny. Like, it's just every time they roll out there, they're running all over the place. They're, you know, they're real tough to pitch to. They can hit velocity. Like, they're just sort of seeing them, you know, evolve into what they're trying to evolve in right in front of your eyes. And they're doing it at a young age, which will tell you that you're going to have to deal with them if you're not a fan of them for a very, very long time, which is – you know, going to be tough on the American League. So, yeah, they're...
It's an interesting point, though, that Spilly makes about rivalry. Because I look at the AL East teams, and I'm trying to...
Jays have one of those?
No, but I'm saying who would emerge as the Orioles' rival? The Jays were the Orioles' rival back in the day with Showalter and Donaldson, and Jose Bautista and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And Marcus Stroman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was a rivalry. I don't know if the Jays have a rivalry right now. You know, I'm looking in the East, Jays, Yankees. I mean, to have a rivalry, the other team really has to kind of hate you as well.
And I think
the Jays were easy for other teams to dislike when they had Bautista and all those guys. They were very easy to dislike.
They were really
for
good.
Other teams. They were good. But they also liked rubbing your face in it. And they had some guys who were. I think some guys were badass. I mean, they were.
Yeah.
They had some guys who...
I mean, O'Day couldn't get Bautista out, which was a big thing. And, you know, you had Donaldson, who nobody liked. just because he was cocky and he was really, really good. And then you had the quiet one who would sneak up on you and crack concrete in left center, and Edwin. Like, you had the big three in the middle of the order who nobody could get out, and, yeah, you know, who managers and organizations never wanted to throw a lefty against. Yeah. Like, that would sort of make you dread coming in here to face them. And the Blue Jays is just not there yet.
No, and the thing about that Blue Jays team, you know, when you look at the important parts of that team, Jose Bautista rescued off the scrap heap. Edwin Encarnacion, he came over here. He was released. I mean, Oakland had him at one point and let him go, and the Jays got him back. Josh Donaldson, late bloomer. I mean, the only guy, you know, I look at that team. Russ Martin was kind of the one guy who came up, was a star instantly, or a good young player instantly, and kept going. And I think that was part of the allure of that Blue Jays team, was you had three core guys who'd, I mean, basically had been thrown aside by the game.
Yeah.
And they played with a huge, Jose Bautista still got a chip in his shoulder. Like, they still, and so does Donaldson.
Yeah.
They still, you talk to those guys, there's still an edginess to them, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I don't think the Orioles are there yet. I just, you know, I don't think they're quite that good yet. All the young guys are trying to find their way, but they're getting there. And I think other teams and other fans of other teams are, you know, can be a little jealous just because of how long they're going to be here. And you can see how good they are at 20 and 21 and 22, which is really, really good.
Let's look at the other teams around the AL East. You look at the Blue Jays. I mean, their window of opportunity with this group is closing.
Yep.
You look at the Rays. The Rays are always going to be, probably always going to be around. But does anybody really hate the Rays? I don't know. Yeah, the ballpark sucks, but you really, really hate. I mean, I have a hard time hating the Rays. And, you know, it's easy for me to hate things than people. The Boston Red Sox. Now, they've got a little bit of a youngish core, but, I mean, I don't know. How many years are they away from being good? I mean, it all depends on the pitching. They've got guys like Tristan Casas, who's kind of an oddball, but do you dislike the guy? I mean, I keep getting back to the Yankees, and I think if the Yankees re-sign Juan Soto and keep Gerrit Cole, then I think that will be the natural rivalry for the Orioles. First of all, because they're close enough and you can go to games, it's, you know, geographically, you can take a train from Baltimore to New York. So I think that's kind of where, you know, where you'll see the rivalry. Where it gets interesting, I wonder if the Orioles are so good that they can go on a run of 4 or 5 years where they're getting to the World Series or getting close to the World Series, then do you start seeing a rivalry with a National League team? Then do you maybe see a rivalry with the Dodgers or the Phillies or the Braves? But
yeah, a lot of things would have to go right for them to match up and play a lot of the times in playoffs and those kind of things. So I think that would be more American League. But yeah, I just think it's how long the Orioles are going to be good. That's what everybody's sort of dreading. I mean, you know, it's how they got there, first of all. I mean, they stunk forever. I mean,
yeah,
basically,
they earned their...
Yeah, basically they've changed rules because of that. Like, it's like, you know, so you can't stink and try and stink forever and sort of build the farm system that they have, because there's a whole nother wave coming. That's way better than the wave that most organizations can even try and run out there. So, yeah, I mean, it's fun. I like, that's why the American League East, nobody likes the American League East unless you're playing in it. I think you got to play in it. I played the American League East. It's different than every other place you play in. It just is. Like going to the different ballparks and dealing with the different sets of fans, and everybody's different. Boston fans are different. Yankee fans. Jays fans are different than everybody else's fans. Orioles fans never were there when I played against them, and you never noticed them, but they are now. So it's just, and Tampa's sort of the same way. Nobody was ever there. You'd sort of laugh. You could hear yourself talking to the person that was sitting in the second deck because nobody was there. It's changed a lot, and I think that's why the American League East is what the American League East is.
And I don't, listen, Yankees-Red Sox, I don't think that's that much of a rivalry anymore. I think the personalities have changed so much.
Yeah, they don't have A-Rod in that.
They don't have A-Rod,
yeah,
and they don't have Ortiz, and they don't have, you know, Johnny Damon, I mean Pedro, all those. The rivalries, it seems to me, the real rivalries in baseball right now are, you know, San Diego, San Francisco, and L.A. Like, people get shot at those games.
Yeah.
You know, and And I'm not saying that flippantly. They do. It is that there are a lot of fights.
More off the field than on the field.
Going to a Dodgers Giants game is like going to an NFL game.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. There's a real dislike and a real rivalry there. Other than that, you know, the Cubs and the Cardinals are kind of a historic rivalry.
Phillies and the Braves now. I mean, the Phillies are beating up on the Braves a lot in the playoffs. Like, I assume that's sort of starting to become one of those.
But it's not just – there has to be something more than we beat you in the playoffs all the time. There has to be a visceral hatred between fans or players. Like, I don't know. Does
dreading playing a team count?
I don't think so.
No.
The Phillies and Braves, do they exchange – they throw pitches at each other the way the Orioles and the Jays did?
Well, maybe the Braves should.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That was the other thing. The Orioles and Jays, they had guys that did not like each other.
Yeah, no.
I mean, they did not like each other.
No, you add Donaldson to the mix. And,
yeah. And then I guess Texas and the Jays. That's the point. You know, that Jays team, when they were good, I mean, they had a series here. I don't know if people will remember it. I think it was just after they made the David Price deal, or it was around there. They had a series against the Kansas City Royals here. Mm-hmm. I think Aaron Sanchez was thrown out of the game for allegedly throwing at somebody.
Yeah.
Like, during that span, the Jays developed these rivalries, not just with the Orioles, but with the Rangers, and to a certain degree
you got to be able to do something that other teams can't do.
Yeah.
To be a rivalry. And right now the Jays just, you know, is you being able to pitch a little bit better in a starting rotation than everybody else, does that make that? I don't think so. Mm. I think it's those everyday guys that, you know, you every once in a while somebody gets thrown at, you point a bat, you let go of one, sorry. It's those kind of things that sort of build hatred between two teams, bit of dread there.
There is that whole thing between Vladdy and Yankees fans, and I don't, you know, where Vladdy saying he never played in New York. Well, he does that every home run. But I'm saying he was, you know, he was the one that came out and said he'd never play in New York, and you know,
I think the Astros, the Yankees got a little bit of 1-2 now. Well, I think the booing and the Astros, Yankees can never beat the Astros.
Well, and anybody who you know, played the trash can bangers.
Yeah. There's the MVP thing.
George Springer gets his ass booed in New York all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Vladdy thing is, and I also I've got to tell you this. I also don't buy it. I mean, there may be some sort of personal reason Vladdy doesn't like New York or the Yankees fans. Maybe it goes to something that happened with his father when his father was a free agent. I don't know. But if the Yankees came along and Vladdy was a free agent and said, you know, 10 years, $435 million, I got to think Vladdy might say, okay.
Yeah, I don't think that's it.
No, I don't think it is either.
I don't think that's a big number.
But what I'm saying is it is amazing how a player's opinion of a city or a marketplace can change when the owner throws open the checkbook. Yep. 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet. Kevin Gausman on the mound for the Blue Jays. Ryan Feltner for the Rockies. Dakota Hudson. Kyle Freeland going on Saturday and Sunday. Kyle Freeland at one point. I mean, people were really high on Kyle Freeland. And
yeah, I think pitching in Mile High, that's hard on some people. Like, you got to be able to work around failure. And sometimes
Rockies don't have a win out of a starting pitcher.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, it's tough to
– not that wins matter anymore.
Feltner's pretty good, though. I mean, he's slider, four-seam guy. He'll throw a change up to lefties. Like, he's got enough to – make it hard on you. So, you know, Jay's lineup's going to have a good approach. We talk about that all the time. You know, I don't think it's all about talent for their lineup. It's a lot more about, I think, having a good game plan and executing that game plan and sticking to it no matter what. Maybe if they can do that, they can score more than 4 or 5 runs, which would help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John Schneider is manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. He is going to join us in the next hour. David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, former MLB executive, will be along as well. We'll talk about some of the details that have come out in the Shohei Ohtani Ipe gambling story, which gets, I mean, baseball's breathing a sigh of relief because it appears as if there's enough room between Ohtani and the sport and the gambling. And it seems to be that's been settled, but there's still an awful lot of odd things involving that story. We'll talk to David about the A's going to Sacramento and also Scott Boras. Is he facing a comeuppance? It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. We'll have to investigate this merchandise thing a little. With people. 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight, the first of three games between the Jays and the Colorado Rockies at the Rogers Center. Kevin Gausman will make the start for the Jays tonight. Ryan Feltner for the Rockies, the Jays coming off a series win over the Seattle Mariners, followed by an off day. John Schneider is manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, and he joins us on Blair and Barker. Hello, John.
Hey, guys. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for having
me. Well, you know, Barker, we're drawing diagrams of T-shirts here that we want to sell for Blair and Barker. I don't know if it's going to...
Nobody's going to buy those, John.
John will buy one.
I'll take one. I don't know if I'll buy one. I'll take one.
that's part of the problem, right?
Absolutely.
Get around to asking the deep, penetrating questions. The reports, and I know Shai retweeted a report that Yariel Rodriguez has been called up from Buffalo. Can you tell us anything about whether any moves have been made so far or what the plans might be for Yariel?
Yeah, he's here, obviously. He's on the taxi squad right now for the time being, and he'll likely be active this weekend. But we'll know more after tonight's game. But, yeah, he is here in the building right now.
John, the first thing I thought of when I heard that might be happening was, is there something wrong with Kevin Gausman? And my question would be for you is, are you worried about the velocity? We have seen that before. Cold weather, he's an older guy, he's thrown a bazillion times. Like, occasionally he's just not going to come out the way you want it to come out. But is there any worry this time around that you won't see his velocity?
I don't think so, no. I mean, Kev felt fine. His side in between was fine. And, you know, looking for just kind of a normal outing from him tonight. I think Yariel's kind of more geared towards the weekend and looking forward to Kev pitching tonight.
Nice.
Romano and Swanson, what can you tell us about them? How we know that they pitched yesterday. How close are they to coming back here?
Yeah, they're getting there. Pitched yesterday. They felt good yesterday after the outing. And they're here today along with Jano. Working out here. They're going to pitch tomorrow in Buffalo. They got their game got canceled today, but Alec is going to start the first game tomorrow, and then Swanee and Jordan will pitch in that game. Janet will catch that game and kind of go from there. But they're getting pretty close, and all the reports are good, and they're feeling good.
With Danny Jansen, is it throwing? Is it hitting? Is it, you know, he can hit in the cage? There's no worry about the wrist. Like, what are you looking for from him?
Yeah, I think just building up right now, Kev. I mean, just basically treating him like a spring training, trying to get him a couple games this weekend and see where he's at. But he's been hitting for a while. He's been catching for a while. And now it's just kind of building up as we would, you know, in spring training towards the end of camp. So he just walked out of the office. He's ready to go. I mean, he's anxious to get back at it. And if we can get two games in this weekend for Jenna, we'll be in a good spot.
Nice.
John, you know, the last game of the Mariners series aside, I think we started to see in the first two games of that series what appeared to be anyhow a template for the way this team will be hitting when they're successful, right? We saw doubles. We saw home runs. Your big guys came through. We saw some stolen bases. You put pressure on the other team defensively. You put pressure on the pitcher defensively. Those two wins kind of encapsulate how you would like to see this team play more often?
Yeah, I mean, the first two were really good against two really good pitchers. I mean, Seattle's got arms, we know that, and I think Gilbert had really good stuff on Wednesday. But you look at the first two, you're wearing down the pitchers, you know, the starters at least, and, you know, getting the pitch count up and getting some timely hits, you know, getting some timely hits with guys on base, you know, home runs from Bo and from Vlad, obviously. But add-on runs were big. You know, I think, you know, Bo with a two-out, two-run homer. You know, Izzy chipping in with a couple knocks and George for the couple add-on runs. That's kind of what we're shooting for. You know, and would like to kind of keep adding those runs on in a perfect world, you know, and you're really trying to, you know, wear out those bullpen guys as well. But I thought we did a really good job with two really good starters that had good stuff in Castillo and Kirby. So hopefully that's kind of the blueprint of what we're trying to do.
John, it looks like Dalton Varsho has a little bit better separation between his front foot and his hands. How do you think that'll help him going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, he's working at it for sure. And when he gets in position to hit on time, he hits the ball hard and he's pretty good. His bats, I think, are getting better. But you know, it's going to take, you know, it's day by day. You know what I mean? I think that he's pretty close to being really good and kind of the version of what we saw down in Florida in spring. Again, he was in good counts all camp, it felt like, and it's a lot easier to do in spring training as opposed to the season when guys are game planning. But when they're on time with their mechanics, and you kind of let your bat speed do the work, he's as good as anybody. So encouraging at bats from him, you know, as of late, and hopefully he can kind of just keep it rolling.
Tim Mays, as you well know, lefties OPS are hitting over 1,400 against it. Hitters slugging over 1,200 on the sinker. He's throwing the sinker 2 miles an hour slower. John, I think just the simple question for you is, how does the sinker get better?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot of things that go into it, really. I mean, the velo is down a little bit. That kind of was a trend, you know, as camp ended. And, you know, we're aware of that. Timmy's aware of that. And I think the biggest thing, you know, two-part answer here is I don't think we've been at the, you know, we haven't had the luxury of putting him in spots where we kind of put him in years past, you know, kind of dominating lefties. And then from there, you know, I think that with the velo down, he's throwing a few more sliders for sure. But I think for Timmy, it's just getting back to being what he's been great at and trusting that the velo was going to come. There's ways to combat it, you know, with ways, you know, with how he's playing catch, how he's getting loose, his throwing program, all that kind of stuff. And we've talked to Timmy. He's been, you know, he's been up front with how he's feeling, and he's feeling good. This, you know, sometimes the velo isn't quite there. That happens at times, and you know, we're confident that it's going to turn. And when it does, he'll be back to being, you know, one of the best lefties in the game.
Mm-hmm. John, what's your confidence level right now in Hennessy Cabrera, and what was the, you know, the I understand this is a couple of days later, but the choice of Meza over him, what went into that choice?
Yeah, everyone, I mean, at this point at time in the year, you know, guys are, you know, some guys feel great some days, some guys don't. You know, so it's not just strictly a numbers-driven decision. You know, there have been days where some guys haven't been feeling the best physically, and that leads to some decisions. But I think after an off day yesterday, confidence in Cabby is where it's always been. You know, we trust him really in any spot. And, you know, he's been, you know, I think kind of building up a little bit as camp ended and as the season started to where he wants to be and feel, you know, comfortable every single time he's out there. I think if he was feeling a little bit better physically on Wednesday, he probably would have been in there, you know, and I think the fact that we had an off day yesterday kind of played into it.
Yeah, John, I really don't sometimes know how to talk about Chris Bassitt because there's a lot going on. And then you watch him with the pitch timer and, you know, where the clock's at whenever he is not even sort of standing on the mound, right, or on the rubber. It's like, you know, you got to get it. You're going to agree on it. You're trying to throw it where you want it to end up. Like, there's a lot going on there. Is that an issue now? Is there just that he's trying to make sure he's on the same page and he wants to make sure it ends up where he wants it to end up?
Yeah, that's kind of Chris. You know, yeah. I think he's the one pitcher that we do have that is very aware of the clock and how to either use it to his advantage or manipulate it, if you will. But yeah, that's kind of him. You know, you look at him and he's in the mound and, you know, he could be rolling and it looks like he's in agony out there sometimes. So
yeah.
He's got some quirks out there for sure that we know of. But yeah, I think that, you know, his personality kind of leads to some of the things that you see on the mound too with the pitch clock.
Yeah, it's funny because I said to Kevin, man, I've gone from being frustrated watching him pitch to absolutely love watching him pitch because you can just tell that he's screwing. It's, I almost get the impression he's screwing around with everybody. Like, he knows. He knows what we're thinking, and he's having
fun. And you, the manager, too, John. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, he's very aware of the rules and how, you know, how they're being put to use right now. You know, you think back to the game in New York with Bowden. It was a leadoff hitter against Glaber, and he kind of stepped off by accident and delivered a pitch, and Chris is thinking of a way he can use it to his advantage. So he's always thinking about something. You know, we've gotten to the point to where we tend to not worry about him when he is out there, when he's doing something crazy.
John, the third time through here with the rotation, it just looks like it's supposed to look, I think. What have you seen from the rotation, and what have you liked that you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, Jose set the bar, right? Jose's been great since day one, and I think the last two from Cooch have been really, really promising and encouraging, and Chris kind of, you know, getting back to himself. It's funny, Chris's first two, you know, I don't think that the results were exactly where he or we wanted him to be, but his stuff has been really, really good. He was good in spring, and it's been kind of carryover into the season, but you know, you get those three guys, and then, you know, you get Kev, obviously, getting back to himself, which we're pretty confident he's going to be starting tonight. Yeah, it's kind of, everyone knows that's how we're built with those guys doing their thing. So it's been a good turn through so far, and hopefully Kev gets us going on the right foot this series.
Do you almost get the sense that there is another level to Jose Berríos? I mean, we've talked about this. You know, he's so dependable in terms of, knock on wood, in terms of staying healthy and posting up and all that. But I kind of get the sense watching him this year that there may just be a little more sort of an all-star-ish level to this guy.
Yeah, he's in a really good spot. You know, you don't want to jinx it or anything. But he's pretty focused, and he was, you know, all winter and all spring. I mean, he's really, I think he's kind of hitting that part of his career where, you know, stuff has always been there, but he's really understanding how his stuff works, and his confidence is really, really high right now. Always been durable, you know, knock on wood, and he's always been a very good pitcher, but I think he's really hitting that point where he understands what his stuff is doing, you know, pretty well against this league right now. And, you know, when you're confident and you have stuff, it's a pretty good combo, but his game is really tight. And, you know, I think he was very vocal about wanting to kind of take that next step at, you know, as a member of the rotation and a big part of it. And he's really answered the bell so far.
John, whenever you see Kirky not getting any hits, I think the first thing you think of is he playing too much behind the plate, right? I think it's 11 out of the 13 games he started behind the plate. I see you smiling. I mean, that's sort of yeah, absolutely. That's the conversation, right? Is there any worry that you may be playing him too much back there, because you're putting a lot on his plate with the offensive side, right? Where you're putting him in the order and the times he's coming up with traffic on the bases, like he's being asked to, you know, get the big hit in the ninth inning with a runner on second against a dude throwing 99. Like, there's a lot there. Any worry that maybe the bat's looking a little slower because he's playing too much behind the plate?
I don't think so. I think it is. It's early. You know what I mean? It's a demanding spot for him to be in right now, you know, behind the plate. And, you know, I think it gets magnified just because of the position he plays. You know, George has played every game. Vlad's played every game. You know, we don't really talk about that, but it gets magnified as a catcher. You know, Kirky's had some big hits for us too. You know, three hits in New York. He has a, you know, the RBI single against Castillo. Munoz is a tough draw, you know, to elevate that ball like he did. You know, that's a good swing right there. There's been some signs that are coming for Kirky, I think. But yeah, it's tough when you're asked to, you know, not only lead a staff and be in charge of a game plan and then go get some hits too, when you are playing that position. So off day came in a good time for him yesterday for sure. And, you know, I'm sure getting Geno back here pretty soon will be a welcome sign.
Yeah, with Kiermaier defensively, I mean, it's off the charts. You've seen it first move, way he runs his routes, his arm strength, like it's off the charts. But offensively, are you seeing anything maybe that is alarming? I know he came out and said because of what he didn't make in the offseason when it come to money-wise from other teams, he was thinking maybe he needs to change his game, his mindset, maybe try and pull balls in the air a little bit more earlier in counts. Are you seeing too much of that? Would you like to see maybe the, you know, down and through it, stay in the big part of the field a little bit more? What are you seeing from him?
Yeah, for Kev, I mean, obviously defense speaks for itself. He's one of, if not the best out there, like you said. I think offensively, you know, quietly had a pretty good spring, I think, with some of the things he was trying to do. And players are always trying to evolve. You know, Kev's coming off one of his best years offensively last year. And I think just him recognizing what he did to get to that point and not trying to do too much will be big for him. And, you know, when you got something to prove, you feel like when you're a guy like Kevin, who is a really, really good competitor, you want to really go out and do a lot. And I think him just understanding, you know, how he fits in our offense, how he fits in our lineup, and the things that we're asking him to do to make our lineup function properly. You know, it's not asking him to do too much. So he's a guy, he'll run into some balls for sure. The biggest difference is just, you know, the swing and miss right now, which happens to a lot of guys. And, you know, he's working on it. And I think that, you know, just a matter of time before he's back to being Kevin Kiermaier.
John, we saw Jimmy Garcia with 100 mile an hour and it's running. How do you keep that fresh?
Oof, carefully, because you want that. You know what I mean? Jimmy's been, you know, quietly, I think since we've acquired him, he's quietly been one of the better relievers in the league, you know, even with an up and down first half last year. But yeah, you got to be careful with him until we really get all of our reinforcements back with Jordan and Swanee. So his stuff is pretty electric, but you know, you got to be careful. Two innings is a big ask, you know, at this point in the year for a leverage reliever. He did that on Wednesday, pretty easily, it looked like. So you got to just be in touch with him, see how he's feeling. If he needs to get an extra day here and there, so be it. But, you know, you can't really put into words how important he's been for us so far. And his stuff just kind of continues to tick up, you know, as he's going. It kind of did at the second half of last year. He's kind of picked up where he left off.
Yep.
John, we're going to let you run and get ready for the game tonight. Thanks so much for doing this, and go get him.
Yeah, good luck, buddy. All thanks. Right.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
See you, man.
Talk soon.
John Schneider, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. So there you go. That interesting updates. Yariel Rodriguez is here. We know that he will be activated tomorrow. He's on the taxi squad today. The Jays probably going to wait and see the shape the bullpen's in after. I mean, there's no point in doing it right now. You got Kevin Gausman pitching, so you have Rodriguez here. They're not playing in Buffalo, so, I mean, you might as well be up here. Romano, Swanson, boy, it sounds like they're going to be here for the Yankee series. Same with Danny Jansen.
Yeah, it sounded to me like Danny Jansen's going to be here real quick. Like, yeah. And listening to him talk about Kirky, look, I know what he's trying to say, and if you sort of read between the lines what he would like to say. Like, it's a lot to ask Kirky to do those things. It's just body time. It's not his fault. That's just the way it is. You want to see the best offensively out of him. I think having Danny Jansen coming back and getting the bigger, you know, of the load behind
three
the plate.
All,
with Kirky. Or with Danny.
Danny.
Well, I would think four of the seven, right? It's, you know, Kirky's the three, him the four behind the plate. He's not going to DH a ton unless he's raking. Like, they got more DHs than they know what to do with. Like, they're trying to maneuver, you know, how they want to maneuver that around. I think that's a big deal. Look, I think if you bring Yariel Rodriguez up here, he's a starter. You got to pitch him. Like, he's starting tomorrow. I'm sorry. Like, he's starting tomorrow. Like, that would make sense. You got more money in him than you do Bowden Francis. Francis is more of a hybrid. His stuff plays in shorter bursts.
You've got
me, it makes more sense with Yariel starting tomorrow. That's just me.
Well, you got more money.
You
got more money in Yariel, but you've also got him for 3 years, and you can only option him this year. You can't option him.
Yeah, but you've said that you want to get him in a routine, right? You want him pitching when he's supposed to be pitching. Today was his day. You can't not bring him up here and not pitch him and not pitch him tomorrow. And then he's got, like, what would that be, 6 full days before he pitches? That's a lot.
But Kevin,
like, you're getting him in a routine here. It would make more sense. And then who he's facing.
You've got to remember, you're dealing with a guy who didn't pitch last year. Like, we don't know.
For me, that's got nothing to do with it. Because now you got Bowden Francis, who could follow, who is used to right now, could come out of the pen and give you the quicker, harder, eliminating stuff. And both guys are better at what they're doing. Yariel would be better at starting because he can work through it two times, and you can bring Bowden in, and he'd be short burst guy and letting it eat, and that's when he's at his best. So I think you're trying to get the best out of both guys.
I think you're also, but you're also, again, we haven't gone down this road with a guy who hasn't pitched for a year. I'm sure they know.
Yeah, but I think they're telling you by the way they were pitching him in AAA.
47 pitches.
But he's pitched the second, then he pitched the seventh. Now his day would be today. Like, they are trying to keep him on a routine to start him.
Yeah.
That's my point. And get him in the routine of starting a game, because your routine is different starting than it would be going to the pen and trying to get ready that way. So, I don't know. I mean, it's intriguing. I think his stuff will play a lot better. You know, you can get lefties out. He's got multiple secondary stuff to get lefties out. He gave one hit in the minor leagues. That's all.
Now we know, of course, that one of the reasons Ennis Cabrera wasn't available in the Mariners series was he didn't feel like he could go.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's reasons why, right? It's, you know, again, I say this and people don't want to hear it, but John was playing for the ninth inning. John was he was trying to walk it off in the ninth so he didn't have to use three of those guys.
Effectively.
Or two of those guys because he didn't have one.
What we know now is he didn't have Cabrera, he didn't have Richards, and he didn't have Chad Green. So we know that now. So his options were.
Well, we knew Richards and Green out the gate. But, he didn't have to tell us that.
No, but what I'm saying
is. We didn't know that he didn't have Cabrera.
Now you know why the game was managed.
Well, let's be honest. Who would you rather use? The Tim Mason that you've seen the start of the season, the Cabrera you've seen the start of the season, which we didn't know that, you know, basically he wasn't pitching, he wasn't available, and the Mitch White you were seeing. So if you're John, you're thinking to yourself, I got Jimmy Garcia who's throwing a bazillion miles an hour who can give me two innings. And if I walk this off in the ninth inning, man, is that some kind of win for us? Because of the way the starting pitcher that we just faced was going. And basically it felt like you had no chance of winning that. And then Vladdy runs into one and in your mind set changes. And you've now I got all kinds of chance of winning this thing.
You got Kirky coming up and Ernie Clement coming up and you've got.
He couldn't have wrote it up any better.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that Kirky didn't get a hit and Clement didn't get a hit.
Although again, we need to mention that it was a pretty good play by Polanco to.
And Munoz is not the easiest gift for a right-handed hitter.
What else did you take away from the discussion? I think, you know, the thing with Kevin Gausman we need to keep in mind is, and Shai wrote this after his last start, this is pretty much the way last season went for Kevin Gausman. He's back home. Kevin Gausman is not the same pitcher in cold weather as he is in warm weather. He's back.
Beginning of the season, I think you can say that.
He's back home. Yes, sorry, beginning of the season.
Yeah.
He's back home. The dome will be closed. Like, I fully expect to see 6 or 7 out of Kevin.
Yeah, Boston. I took away Tim Mason's not hurt. Sounds like they had conversations. Yeah. I mean, he basically said that he's healthy. That's not the issue. It's the it's mechanical. It's hard routine.
It's got to be hard to build up velo in season, though.
I mean, he ain't. It's not. He hasn't had it since spring training. He's had this issue for quite some time. Like, they've been trying to figure this out for a while. So it's not injury. Like, he's not hurt. They're doing all that to figure out if the ball is spinning the way it's supposed to be spinning. Is it starting to move when it's supposed to be starting to move? And like, all of those things are all systems go. It's just the extra tick and velocity that he's not getting. And a lot of that times is why I mentioned the Dalton Varsho thing, the separation of why you get that is torque. And if you're Tim Mason and me knowing Pete Walker the way I do, I'm sure that's the first thing you think of. It's ball out of the glove and how quickly it gets to the stretch, how soon it gets there, how long it stays there, how much it whips through the zone before he releases the ball. It's all right in there. If he fixes that, the rotation will be better, the torque will be where it wants to go, and the little extra gear will be there at the end. And again, beginning of the season, a lot of people just have trouble refining it. And again, it's like the Kevin Gausman thing. We've seen Kevin have velocity issues. We've seen Tim Mesa have velocity issues. That will give them something to step back on and say, we've seen you do it like that before. When you did it that way, what did we do to correct it so it wasn't escalating into you going out there and not being the guy we want you to be? So, I mean, look, pitching-wise, you can't argue what they've been doing. Like, they figured it out. They're giving most of the time their team a chance to win. And I think they feel very confident in calling up guys that will sort of just fill in the blanks, hit the ground running, and give them a chance. And it's nice that they calling them up against the Rockies, too. Rodriguez, they ain't like they're wearing baseballs out. Like, you could pitch to them, and I think they feel confident, and he'll come up and have some confidence and maybe can carry over, and you'll get the best however many innings out of Rodriguez you want to get out of him.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is all eyes ahead to that Yankee series coming up and the three-game series.
Well, he did mention the last time he was on how big the American League East is.
That's why they were
Can't go 21-31 again.
Gausman. That's
can't
why
do
they,
that.
I mean, that's how they set up Kevin Gausman originally.
Yeah.
Pitch against the AL East. The Jays lineup for tonight's game is Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, Biggio in the fifth spot. Kirk's behind the plate. Varsho, Kiner, Falefa, and Kevin Kiermaier hitting ninth for the Blue Jays.
Well, they don't have a five-hole hitter, so you got to move Kevin around. He's having better at bats. The ball's coming off his bat a little bit more.
Lefty, righty, lefty, righty, lefty thing.
I mean, I think you're going to see that a ton, right? He's begging a little. I mean, I don't say that in a negative way, But I do say that after the fourth guy,
when
it's you're throwing a bunch of names against the wall and hopefully one of them sticks.
When Jano comes back, do you automatically put him in the fifth spot?
No, because that's five righties in a row.
That's what I was saying. So you want to go, one of your lefties is going to be hitting in the fifth spot, probably followed by Jano.
Perfect scenario, absolutely. That way maybe Danny will come up with traffic on the bases, can run into a three-run homer instead of a solo shot. It's that kind of thing, right? And now you're seeing Turner being pitched around a lot too. You know, in big moments, so who would want to pitch to him when you could pitch to Cavan or anybody else that's on that team? So the 5-0 hitter might be the most important guy on this team all of a sudden. May end up that way where, because they're starting to get guys on base, and then first four guys are starting to, you know, be, I think, what they want them to be. And that 5-hole guy is going to come up and, you know, sort of that 5-hole guy and that 7-hole guy. That's why you're seeing Kirky in that 7-hole quite a bit. You know, it was sort of that way last year where it's just sort of that guy that comes up with guys on base, and somebody's going to have to step. One of them guys is going to have to step up. I mean, somebody's going to have to help out, and hopefully it can start today. It's about confidence.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at Biggio, Kirk, Varsho, IKF, or Kiermaier, one of those guys stepping up. I mean, I think I wouldn't put Jano in that mix. I think you know what he's probably.
Well, the IKFs and the Kiermaier stepping up's a different step up than a run producer in the 5 or 6 hole. Like, those are two sort of different kinds of at-bats you want to have. You know, your approach, what you're looking for, what you're trying to do. You know, if I'm Kevin Kiermaier, I ain't trying to pull the ball no more. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's inside the ball up the middle. Like, I'm not trying to do that anymore. IKF, you know, let it travel and hit it the other way. Get on base. You were fast enough to steal a base. It's those kind of at-bats that you're expecting to flip the lineup over where you're at in the order. So everybody's got their purpose, right?
A reminder that Kevin, Blair and Barker, I should say, will be doing Blue Jays Talk following the game tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. 7:07 will be the first pitch. Ryan Feltner on the mound for the Rockies. Kevin Gossman for the Blue Jays. David Sampson is host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. He's a former MLB executive. Lots to talk to him about. Shohei Ohtani. The A's going to Sacramento. Scott Boras losing a client. And David has a lot of experience, both from his time in Montreal with the Expos and his time with the Marlins. He has a lot of experience in dealing with really good young players coming up at the same time. We'll talk to him about the Baltimore Orioles and how he sees the Orioles playing this out in terms of long-term contracts for their young players. It's Blair and Barker for Friday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker for Friday.
Afraid to push a button?
Well, I'm in a little debate off air.
It's not a debate.
A little debate. 7:07 is the first pitch. What? I just didn't. You made a point, and I can't find it anywhere. I can't find
it. It's not a big deal anyway.
Let's bring in David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. Mr. Sampson, thanks for joining us today.
How are you doing today?
We're doing well. We're doing well. We're spending a great deal of time kind of going through the Shohei Ohtani stuff.
Yeah. I'm starting not to like him. I think that's what it is.
What?
It comes down to I don't like him.
But Barker doesn't like him anymore.
I should like him because he's an unbelievable player, but I'm having a tough time, David. I really am.
Are you having a tough time because he's not a Blue Jay? Are you having a tough time because you don't believe him?
Yeah,
a tough time because you feel sorry for him?
I think it's the believe part. I think that's it. The being a Blue Jay, I mean, realistically, we didn't really think maybe that was going to happen. But everything he says sometimes, it's like, we're supposed to believe that you didn't notice that $16 million is not in your account. It's just hard to believe, that's all.
I think that's actually the most believable part of it.
Is it really? It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but you'd be surprised the way players are with their finances. Sometimes they just don't know, and they just assume that everything is paid for and that money keeps rolling in. I think what I'm struggling with and I'm trying to work through it. I read the entire 37-page affidavit. I'm trying to picture how much a best friend could lie to me without me knowing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's been in my head. When I'm sitting around with my best friend and he says, hey, let's watch this college women's lacrosse game, I'd have to say, why? And I may want to dig deeper to all of the games he must have wanted to watch. The second thing that I'm really struggling with is how bad Bank A is,
mm-hmm.
and how bad his agents and representatives are.
Yeah.
Well, listen, that leads to my next question. I would think Major League Baseball, they've probably seen enough separation with the documents that were released. I think maybe there's enough separation between Ohtani personally and the possibility of betting on baseball. I think that, but David, you brought up this point. I look at, I still think the Dodgers and the Angels in some way in terms of due diligence. And I know what you said in our podcast about hiring interpreters and interpreters. I still think there's something there, but you're absolutely right. Like the agency doesn't even appear to have had a translator working for them. Like the agency's going through this guy as well, which I found really hard to believe. This is a multi-billion-dollar industry. Surely to God, you can find a Japanese interpreter. I mean, I know a guy in my neighborhood who would gladly do it.
Well, just get a resume. But I was surprised to read that as well. All of the agencies have interpreters for the clients who don't speak English, who speak only Spanish. And you would think that your biggest client who's about to hit free agency, that you'd want to make sure you're able to really communicate. And when we made offers to free agents, we did it through the agents, but we also spoke to the player. We wanted to make sure there was no misunderstanding about what was happening. So it is shocking to me that the agent, Nez, did not have an ability to speak and also was willing to just accept the interpreter saying, hey, this account where the pay goes, that's a private account. We don't talk about it. From a team standpoint, I should point out, no problem. When we're told what account to put money in, we do it. We don't really care because some guys want to hide money from their wives. Some guys want to save money for later. Whatever the case is, not our issue. Mm-hmm. So the Dodgers putting money into an account that then is not looked at by either Ohtani or his representatives, that's not something the Dodgers or Angels have any culpability over. But if you're his financial representative and you're his accountant, it's got to be a breach of fiduciary duty. And I use that legal word with reason for you just to accept what the interpreter says and, hey, it's private, leave it be. That's just not acceptable to me.
Is the commissioner's office happy with this right now? Oh. Like, is this cleaned? Is this kind of
face of baseball
allowed them to step back, though, and say, hey, not us?
I was thinking today before I did nothing personal this morning, has there ever been a smokier gun than his statement to the bookmaker after the LA Times article came out, which said, technically, I stole from him, love Mitsuhara.
Yeah.
It was just right there. It's so perfect. But MLB's statement was very important today, where they said they're going to wait for the criminal case to be resolved. They're going to keep investigating. Because don't forget, the affidavit that we're all talking about today is about wire fraud and bank fraud.
Mm.
It's not about gambling. It's not about whether Ohtani had a relationship with a bookmaker. It's not about anything other than trying to get Mitsuhara on wire fraud and bank fraud. And there's a specific time period. MLB has to go back to the beginning in its investigation. 9,700 text messages. They got to look at 100,000 text messages to make sure there's nothing there because they don't want to get caught with more information coming out after they say that he is free and clear.
So I shouldn't feel sorry for him is what you're saying.
Everybody has their own issues. You can feel sorry for anyone you want. The Dodgers are going to continue. The season's going to continue. Ohtani's going to continue. The one who you think about is what is going to happen to Mitsuhara. What's going to happen to the other $24 million that's owed to the bookmakers in theory, according to the affidavit? So I still think there's more to come with this story, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the Blue Jays real quick before we move on to other things. So far, lineup-wise, I mean, every time we have John, we just had John on, and we were talking about the rotation, and, you know, that third time through is starting to look like it's supposed to look, and here comes run prevention again. And then we start talking about the lineup, and it just sort of the conversation tends to get a little quieter, and, you know, the answers get a little shorter because I think they're searching a bunch of the times. But on the outside looking in, what do you think about the Jays lineup?
I'm not upset with my pick for the Blue Jays to have a fantastic season and maybe even win the division and make the playoffs. It is so early. And if you look at some of the teams that are overperforming, you should go back to last year and what we were saying about the Pirates and their start. And I think they ended up losing 80 or 90 games. It's really still too early in the season. And hitting has a tendency to be contagious. But the player that we've talked about on this show, who I'm still looking out every day, is Guerrero.
Yeah.
And I wonder what is going through his mind when a season becomes a trend, and he put a lot of pressure on himself to be a superstar this year, and the Blue Jays cannot afford for him to be ordinary.
Yeah.
How does the Oakland situation play out in your mind?
With tears and a journey. How does it play out? Well, it's funny to me because, the team going to Sacramento and everyone took a victory lap as though that meant the deal to Vegas was done. Two totally separate things.
Mm-hmm.
The deal to Vegas is not done. This was not part of what was resolved. It was only resolved where the A's will play for the next 3 to blank years. To get that deal in Vegas done, they've got to figure out their TV deal, their stadium deal, their financing, how big the property will be from Bally's, because I still question the whole 9-acre plan, whether Bally's will continue with this development at all, given their financial issues. So I think that there, again, is still more chapters, but MLB was able to quiet the noise and get on with the season by saying they were moving temporarily to Sacramento. But man, Jeff, and did you guys see what Vivek said? That
yeah,
they're in the pole position for expansion. That's a surefire way to be not in the pole position.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Judge hitting homers, too. I mean, that's just, it's like, so holy unreal. Moly. Like, it's just, it's crazy. But staying in the American League, can we finally say that the Orioles are the best organization in baseball? It's a two-part question. That's my first question. And the second one is, this is sort of with the Orioles, is if you were in the front office of the Orioles and you were calling up all of these young players, what do you look for right out the gate from these young players?
Heartbeat. What we look for is heartbeat. What we look for is how they handle failure. There's a lot of failure at the big league level, and it's hard for young people to deal with failure, to deal with adversity. These are players, if you look at the AAA lineup, they're getting 4 knocks every game, driving in 10 people a game. When you get to the big leagues, it's a different story, as Jackson Holliday is going to figure out and all young players figure out. So we wait for the first slump, but we don't call up our top guys until we know we're going to play them through that first slump, and they're going to play every day. But we're looking for body language. We're looking to see how they're reacting to the ups and downs, how they're reacting to being a professional baseball player. And I know you're professional in the minor leagues, but how the travel, how they are on the road. We're looking for their preparation. We're looking for how distracted they get. And from Baltimore's standpoint, to get to your first point, you can't be the best organization in baseball without a ring.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's controversial, but to me, it's plain. You got to win a World Series, and you got to start by winning a pennant. So the Orioles are stacked. They're fun to watch, and they're good. But you got to do it in October to be the best organization.
Dave, you said something about a slump, and I wonder, because I was in a bunch of those when I was a player, but I was in some of those the first like month and a half or 2 months when I first got called up. And I wonder how a front office, what's the definition of a slump for a young player?
Well, our owner, it was 0-for-2 with a walk.
So yeah, it was
a deep slump where we needed to address it immediately. My view is more like a 3-for-30 type situation. I want to see it over the course of a week. I want to see it get so bad. I want to understand when we have an approach for a situation. So, for example, man on third, one out, and we need a run because we're down a run, and the player is getting down on the knob, getting on one knee, trying to pull the ball. for a home run when this is a player who clearly is a contact player who could get the job done just by being his normal self. So we're looking for changes that happen. And I think you can't see that inside a week. And sometimes a week is even too short, but the media and the owners tend to get very loud after a week.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
Yeah, no, I've often
always wondered.
Now you know. If only the Milwaukee Brewers owner had told you that when you were brought up.
Some like 115, one for 15s, one for 17. I was wondering, am I in a slump? Do they think I'm in a slump? I don't feel like I'm in a slump, but now you answered the question. That's a great answer.
Jordan Montgomery apparently firing Scott Boras. This is right in your wheelhouse. I mean, there's no way I'm going to let you go without asking this. Should we expect to see more as a result of what we saw this offseason?
Only if there's an attack of the smarts by players. You know, Jordan Montgomery has chosen one of my favorite agents, not because I can take advantage of him, because he's just good to work with and honest and smart, and that's Joel Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Montgomery realized that Boras overpromised and underdelivered. And he's got two huge players coming up with Alonso and Juan Soto. And it remains to be seen whether owners will continue to treat Boras the way he ought to be treated, which is by not giving in to him. But he does not like losing players at all. He likes poaching. He doesn't like being poached. And the players who leave him are generally players who he views as no longer able to make him money, so he doesn't get upset. Jordan Montgomery may be an example. We don't know yet. He may be an example of a player who could have made Boras more money at the end of this year, plus a vesting option next year. So I don't think he's upset yet, but it could be on the horizon.
David, how important are for a team is a relationship between a player and his agent? Like, you know, I would think that from a distance, there's two ways to look at it. One, if there's some tension there, a team can take advantage of it. But at the same time, if a player and agent are on the same page, isn't it kind of easier to talk to somebody knowing that when you're talking to this guy, he is, you know, the information's going from him to this guy and the information from the player to him is coming to you and it's seamless? Like, what would you rather face as a negotiator?
In the real world, of course, that sounds nice, like butterflies and unicorns, but we'd like to divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see a player walk in the clubhouse and there was an agent, oh, guys, I'm losing my mind. Dontrell Willis, Ricky Nolasco. I can't remember the name of the agent, but all the players had tattoos of the agent's name on them. And we said, oh, this could be an issue. Scott Olsen, I think he had as well. And so what we did is we would negotiate with the agent, but always talk to the player as well. I had so many conversations with Jose Fernandez about Scott Boras. He was so loyal to Scott. And I would just ask him, is he treating you the way you want to be treated? Is he paying attention to you? And Jose, who would spread the Boras gospel around our clubhouse, trying to get players. That's how Scott does it. He gets his players to do the bidding for him. And Jose would try to convince other players to move to Boras by saying how attentive he is. But then people would say, but Jose, you're the best pitcher in baseball. What about us? We're fringe players or we're level two free agents. So it really does depend on the player. But Joel Wolf with Giancarlo Stanton, they were always on the same page. There was no way to divide them. And it was fine by us. We can go either way. But if there's issues, then sometimes it's to our advantage.
David, we're going to let you scoot. Yeah. Great of you to do this,
awesome,
man. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good insight as always.
Tremendous.
Take care.
See ya.
David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, former MLB executive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Having your agent name tattooed would be.
That's a bit much. I would never do that. Like, no matter how much money he's made. Like, just pay him more. That makes you feel better about yourself. Pay him more. It's intriguing to hear him talk just about how front offices think about youth in baseball. Like, how they think about a slump and what it's supposed to look like when you come to the big leagues, even though you had a tremendous minor league career or, you know, you're the top prospect in baseball. It's very intriguing to hear him talk about that and how they just think about how it's supposed to look.
Yeah, it's and again, David, they've had a lot of experience with the Marlins and the Expos with young players. But yeah, I also wonder if maybe a front office that doesn't have a lot of former players in it would view it differently than a front office. You know, if you've got a guy in the front office who's been one for 30 at one point. I mean, I've often wondered about that. Now I would think that there's so many ways of measuring a slump. You can look at
pass
speed and all that. And all like that
stuff. It's only about five games, right? I mean, that's what they, every time Vladdy doesn't hit the ball the way everybody wants him to, they say, well, look how hard he's hitting at exit velocities.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've been giving you, and we are giving you, the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here in Blair and Barker, whether you listen on the radio or on our podcast. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590. Yesterday's question was for a chance to see the Jays and Rockies. The question was, the Blue Jays acquired star Rocky shortstop Troy Tulowitzki in 2015. Who was the only player involved in that trade who participated in last season's World Series? The answer was Miguel Castro. You forget Miguel Castro was in that deal. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Yankees next week at the Rogers Center, Monday and Tuesday. Look out. Last season, this Yankee became the fourth pitcher in franchise history to pitch a perfect game. Name him. Again, last season, this Yankee became the fourth pitcher in franchise history to pitch a perfect game. Name him. You can text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. As always, see rules at sportsnet.ca/590. I loved your conversation with David Sampson about Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I don't know how to think about that. Do you? Look, I want to feel, whoa is me. I find it hard to believe that you have no idea.
I'm going to say this.
Taking money out of your account. Come on.
I wrote a little something on this in sportsnet.ca a couple of weeks ago. You know what this suggests to me is just how spoiled and coddled Shohei Ohtani has been throughout his baseball career.
Yeah.
Like, you think about, you know, I keep thinking of that interview we did with Joe Maddon. Joe Maddon made the point that, hey, when you bring Shohei Ohtani in, you're bringing an entire ecosystem. You're bringing the translator. You're bringing his own physio. Like, everybody's got hangers on. Mm-hmm. You're bringing all these people into the environment. The trickle-down effect is that they're going to rub shoulders and maybe butt, you know, they're going to butt up against your own guys, your own physios, whatever, your own executive. Like, and I've said this. I mean, you know, Thank God that you've got Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Clayton Kershaw. I mean, those guys have been around. Max Muncy. It's not going to impact this team on the field. I can say that. I will not impact
they
the Dodgers on the field. They could care less.
Show up
and hit a couple of home runs.
we're
happy with it.
Yeah.
But man, I just and you know, look, that we've already seen the payoff for the Dodgers. Every day now, there seems to be a news release about another Japanese company signing a marketing agreement with the Dodgers. But I wonder, over the life of the contract, does it at any point become an issue? Maybe not a distraction, but an issue.
Not if they're winning World Series.
What if they don't? Well, it's not like they've won a ton of World. What if they go 3 years without winning a World Series and Shohei Ohtani's getting all this? I mean, everything's being done to make Shohei Ohtani happy.
Yeah. I'm sure people will be fired. There'll be changes. Yeah, it's must win.
Yeah,
their season starts in October.
And I don't know beyond the. I mean, I you know, David would certainly know more about how players are paid than you were a player, so you'd know how you were paid. But I mean, and how players get big money. You know, I do know. I mean, David is right. I keep telling the story about Tim Raines. Basically, Tim Raines got an allowance from his agent every week. His agent was a good agent. It was Tom Rich and Adam Katz. They were legit agents, had a lot of big players.
Yeah.
There was nothing that's how Tim wanted it. Tim wanted, take care of my money, give me an allowance.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm not completely surprised that Shohei Ohtani would allow Ipe to do a lot of stuff for him and have access for him. I'm like David, I more wonder about the agency. I'm sorry. How can you put all your trust in one guy.
Yeah, I'm sure he had access.
That this guy is telling Shohei Ohtani the truth all the time. I find that really odd. It's like, it's almost as if there was a real lack of attention paid to Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I don't like the Dodgers anymore. I think I've come to that realization. The more you talked about it, the less I like them.
That's it for us. We will be back Monday. Don't forget, Blair and Barker doing Blue Jays talk following tonight's game. 7:07 first pitch. Enjoy the baseball. Enjoy the weekend. And we shall see you on Monday.